What a wonderful world.
Like Ursula Goodenough, Scott Topper finds wonder here on terra firma. Topper is a geneticist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and a poet. He wanted to see whether he could find focus and maybe wonder in meditation as well as in the lab. So he paid a visit to Deer Park Buddhist Center in Oregon, Wisconsin. At Deer Park, Topper took a crash course in meditation with George Chernoff, a monk who's been meditating for decades. Here's a bit of their meeting.
I feel very cluttered and would like to be able to, for myself, would like to be able to reacquire the ability to fix strongly with my mind on particular
things. Reacquire, you had it before.
I think it would, in certain subjects.
Buddhism feels that the mind is the most important thing of our, the most important component of our being. If we were to enhance anything or develop anything, that's the best thing to develop, because although we can change the outer conditions around us through economy or physical development, economic development, or our social development, our circle of friends and family and things, even if we have more material, we don't necessarily have more happiness. So one thing that's useful is this technique that you've come and you've mentioned, meditation.
Geneticist Scott Topper and longtime Buddhist monk George Chernoff. Chernoff taught Topper a simple breath-watching exercise, a beginner's meditation. For 2 weeks, Topper practiced the technique to see where meditation could take him. Here he is reading from his meditation journal.
Day 1. Today, I began to learn to meditate from a monk named George. George is an American who has been practicing a monastic life for 30 years. For this segment, I've got 2 weeks to see how much progress I can make into the mysteries of meditation. I'm optimistic. After only one lesson, I'm already as bald as he is. George believes that you meditate to become a better person, more kind, more compassionate, more generous, for the sake of other people in the world. I think that's great. At our lesson, we sat in silence for short times at a stretch, and he talked in between, tried to help me concentrate only on my breath. We were in a lovely place, I liked him, and he didn't seem revolted by me. All in all, the world received one more pleasant afternoon. Pretty good start. Day 2. I don't consider myself to be a spiritual man. I don't come to meditation as a seeker after deeper truths. I'm not casting around for a fish to haul me to shore. But I often feel scattered and shaken, and that makes it difficult to see what's going on. I want to concentrate more fully on the small, dirty world that has me, and sometimes my mind is so buzzy, that's impossible. Today I tried solo meditation for the first time. I sat on a few pillows, legs crossed, hands in my lap. The air conditioning was on. Blue cotton sheets, wrinkled and in disarray. A fleck of something. Peanut? I didn't pick it up because I was meditating. Meditators are peaceful and do not pick up flecks of peanut. George seemed to like reminding me that I and everyone I love will die, which now seems snarky. Snarky monk. Snarky monkey. This is not going well. After about 2 minutes, I gave up, frustrated and distinctly less peaceful than I was before I began. I went to sleep and spent an unpleasant night lost among red and black trees. Day 3. It is stunning how difficult this is, more difficult than I had anticipated, and certainly more difficult than it seemed in the weird remove at Deer Park, surrounded by small silver bowls of water, tapestries of someone else's gods, and George's lovely voice and flowing ochre robes. Today, instead of meditating, I sat like a simulacrum of peacefulness, making frantic mental lists of things to do in the lab. I work in a genetic research lab that studies yeast. Odd as it may sound, yeast are very much like humans. We share the same basic cellular structure and the same genetic processes. So yeast is our mirror. We look because we want to understand how we work, how we are made, how each minute biochemical reaction contributes to the bewildering, resilient order of life. Although I'm not spiritual, I do have strong central beliefs. I believe in beauty, and I believe in the profound pleasures to be had from the simple act of wonder, from visiting the magnificent intricacies of our genetic landscape, from learning to understand the biochemistry that permits the vascular structure of a leaf, or a hand, or an eye, from learning to feel the stunning correctness of a slash of paint, a stolen phrase, a familiar glance. Beauty is the surprise we feel that such things coexist with us in the same world where we brush our teeth and go to work and tie our shoes. In English, this belief is even embedded in our language. Wonderful means excellent. What is excellent is that which is full of wonder. Anyway, our lab studies transcriptional regulation and the way yeast cells respond to stress. Because I am clumsier than the yeast, I am learning to meditate. One friend observed that if he were a stressed-out yeast, he would simply ferment enough alcohol to drink himself into a stupor. That works too. Day 5. I sit and try to clear my mind. It's futile and frustrating. Within seconds, I'm reminded of something, hear something, give way to the chaotic chorus of random murmurs. So here's a parable. A Zen master and his student walked together onto a remote hill overlooking a valley and sat in silence underneath a tree. After some time, the student said, "How beautiful." The master replied, "Yes, but how terrible to say so." Anyway, now, instead of meditating, I'm watching that story spin out forever. I imagine a second Zen master climbing the hill to say, "You know, saying how terrible to say so didn't help much either." And a third Zen master falls from the tree and says to the second, "You think you're so smart? Just shut your hole." And inside the third Zen master is a fourth who mutters, "Trying not to think here," and on it goes. Meanwhile, the student has fallen asleep or stumbled down the hill to a bar, while the infinite series of masters fall to a throwdown fist fight, each vying to be the champion of silence. Day 6. Here's the metaphor that George gave me that has done as much harm as good. The mind is a wild elephant. One must grab it by snagging a sharp hook into its thick skin, then tie its leg to a stout tree. It will tug and wander in its allotted space and thus be trained. Soon you won't need the rope. The animal will be calm. But I don't meditate with my whole heart. I'm not sure that a tame elephant is more beautiful than a wild elephant. Not sure that the act of taming doesn't ruin the very things that make an elephant magnificent, the power, the passion, the strength to wander over vast stretches of inhospitable land. Why not learn to ride the elephant in its wild state? Why not cling to its rough flesh and move to its natural rhythms? After all, where can a tame elephant take you? Day 7. Now my aspirations have changed. I hope one day to be distracted from my meditation by a complete fluid line of thought. The real problem now is spiky points of thought, little flashes that don't even string together into a line, that chart no path, that mark no trail. Day 13. Today, I think I had a briefest moment of quiet, a still point in the turning world. Then it was gone, and this was in its place. In the coastal waters near Hawaii, there is a small squid called Euprymna that does something remarkable. Its body has special crypts to nurture a single kind of bacteria. When that bacteria grows to a certain population density, the cells emit light, and the squid, itself translucent, lights up, luminous with its infection. Science is like travel. We are strangers speaking a foreign tongue, trying to understand the obscure customs of a Byzantine new country. Luminescent squid. Humans who can control their minds. You could fit millions of yeast cells on the head of a pin, like angels. Day 14. I know the Dalai Lama would probably laugh at a 2-week meditation odyssey. I know that monks do not grow overnight like chia pets. But the 2 weeks is up, and I feel just as heavy as I did when I began. I have avoided my enlightenment. For the weeks of this experiment, I've had Robert Frost haunting me to give voice to my love and ambivalence towards this project. Here's why, from his poem, Birches. I'd like to get away from Earth a while, and then come back to it and begin over. May no fate willfully misunderstand me and half grant what I wish and snatch me away not to return. Earth's the right place for love. I don't know where it's likely to go better.
Scott Topper is a poet and a geneticist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.